52DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Morgan Norwood. The FBI now searching another of President Biden's home in Delaware, this one in Rehoboth Beach, as part of the investigation into handling of classified material. The president's personal lawyer calls it a planned search. The Fed is set to raise interest rates again today. A 0.25% hike is expected. The funeral for Tyre Nichols in Memphis is today, pushed to this afternoon due to bad weather and travel delays. Still, the investigation into his police beating death is ongoing.
Many activists, including Reverend Al Sharpton, other activists as well, and Vice President Kamala Harris is planning to attend, as well as the families of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, who were killed by police. Their families are expected to attend the funeral, which has just been pushed back to 2 o'clock Eastern time, 1 o'clock local, because of the weather here in Memphis.
ABC's Stephanie Ramos. This is ABC News. At the White House today, President Biden meeting with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy on raising the debt limit.
The two sides are already trading barbs, where the president says that McCarthy is beholden to off-the-wall commitments he made to the far right. McCarthy says the president is playing politics, so this is going to be quite a meeting, but I would not expect much progress here today.
ABC's Mary Bruce in Washington. The former head of bankrupt cryptocurrency exchange FTX is now barred from getting in contact with any of his former workers.
The judge modified the terms of Sam Bankman-Fried's release on bond to prohibit him from contacting former employees of the crypto exchange he founded, FTX, unless he's in the presence of his attorneys. The judge also blocked him from using Signal and other encrypted messaging apps. Federal prosecutors had said these limitations were necessary because Bankman-Fried had reached out to, among others, the general counsel of FTX. The defense characterized the outreach as innocuous, but to prosecutors it seemed designed to influence potential witness testimony in his criminal case. Aaron Katursky, ABC News, New York.
Morgan Norwood, ABC News.
Never completely ready to adopt a teen.
For late nights writing English papers.
For your teen's music taste.
For dinners, where they talk more on their phone than with you.
For the first time, they call you mom.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen, and you can't imagine the reward.
To learn more about adopting a teen, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Remember the last time your family visited the forest? It's a place of wonder and imagination for the whole family, where stories come to life, and it's closer than you think. Ready to plan your next visit? Make the forest part of your story today at a local park near you, or find one at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
From Green Bay to Oshkosh and Point South, wherever you are in the Fox Valley, count on us to keep you connected, informed, and entertained. Civic Media.
Continue the conversation online. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook and on Twitter.
From the Civic Media News Desk, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. The race for Wisconsin Supreme Court is getting a lot of attention. State Senator Melissa Agard says voters seem to be more aware of what's at stake.
Whether it's reproductive freedoms, whether it's the maps for our legislative districts, whether it's access to voting, those have been on the front burner for people in our state.
Agard speaking at a WisPolitics luncheon yesterday. The primary election is the 21st. Wisconsin dairy farmers are getting more money for their milk. The U.S. Ag Department says Wisconsin dairy farmers got $23.30 per hundredweight in December of last year. That's $1.80 more than a year before that. In sports, seven-time Super Bowl winner Tom Brady says he's retiring for good this time. The Bucks beat Charlotte last night and Marquette hosts Villanova tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad Thursdays at 11:30. We are joined by Dr. Michael McCutcheon, who is a psychologist, a lecturer, and additionally, he's won 10,000 fantasy football leagues and loves to help people make easy, free money. Dr. Mike fixes your life and your lineup.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Go by any construction site in Wisconsin, you're going to see a lot of Michael's trucks. Since 2014, they've had more than $1 billion worth of contracts with the state government.
A large part of those coming with Foxconn without any results in that area.
Do we want a governor who might be giving his brothers the contract? I think he needs to answer that before the election.
We'll just kick that one down the road. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But of course, Michael's corporation would get to build that said bridge.
Listen Monday through Friday from 2 to 3. It's Dueling Tangents.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation.
Who to hate and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class. Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. Federal Reserve. I got to tell you, it seems very, very curious. Seems very on point that a recession is coming. A recession is coming because it's wanted, not because it's a natural thing that, you know, can't help it. It just happens. Who knew? No. Decisions, policies, ideas, thoughts. Federal Reserve raised a quarter, interest rates 0.25% again. And you go, why? Why? Inflation's slowing. Everyone's going, inflation's slowing. Even the Federal Reserve says inflation's slowing, but we're still going to remain aggressive. And why? Why? Well, because the wealthy in corporate America want a recession. They want the pain and suffering that's going to come with a recession. They want to claw back the power that they once had over those working stiffs. They want to claw back that power. They want to lower wages. That's the reality. And we're seeing it playing out. And what's interesting to me is again, our politics play into this as well, because if you look at what the Federal Reserve is doing, raising rates really aggressively, in fact, much more aggressively than most economists think is needed, except the really crazy way out ones who, again, on corporate payrolls. Add that to the conservative messaging around inflation that really has been covering for the corporate greed and gouging that we've all been suffering under. And we're being set up for a rude awakening. I mean, we really are. This seems planned. It seems planned to move the country further towards corporate rule. Got to create those crises, because out of every good crisis, there's opportunity. And you see it all over these social media apps where these rich people are going, hey, be prepared for when it comes, because it's like they know what's coming. We've seen this movie. We've seen the game before. We know how the Fed works. We know how rich people work. It's how they get richer. They get richer by making the poor poorer. And the sad reality is we're falling for it. You look at the responses people have to the problems, and it's all simplistic. It's all Joe Biden's fault. Oh, how much easier can it be? Blame the old guy in the White House. You know, the guy that they say can't do anything. Sleepy Joe doesn't know where he is, but he's doing all this stuff. He's crashing the economy. It's all his fault. And it's easy to blame on that. Because if it were something more than that, well, then people might organize around it. People might have some outrage at the fact that they're being gouged. Nobody likes to get ripped off, right, left, or center, red hat or blue hat. Nobody likes to get ripped off. And we're in this moment. And again, you look over the last several decades, what has happened? Crisis? And what comes out of the crisis? Oh, sorry, working people. Tighten the belt. Tighten the belt. You go back to the 70s. Go back to the 70s. Stagflation. Oh, we gotta crush those unions and those wages. We need to privatize. We need to deregulate. We need to privatize. And the birth of neoliberalism. We give corporate America all this power. They'll crush those workers. Don't you just worry. And Carter allowed it with trucking deregulation and airline deregulation. And you effectively crushed those industries. And Reagan came in full tilt boogie with his supply side voodoo Reaganomics and massive tax cuts. Took the top marginal tax rate from 70% all the way down to 28%, creating a massive, massive deficit. And then get people concerned. Oh, we're spending too much money, you know, on those social programs. Because be afraid, the boogeyman, we got to spend all this money on military and can't question that. And they've trained us. Over the decades, they've trained us to think that anytime there's a crisis, working people have to take it on the chin. Anytime there's a crisis, we need to destroy our social safety net so that the wealthy can have more. Because they're smart. They know what to do with the money. And they are. They do know what to do with it. They make more for themselves. And the sad reality is Democrats have not been the greatest champions either. Like I said, Carter, you know, during his administration, neoliberalism took root. And it fully flourished under Reagan. Clinton, while better than Dole or H.W. Bush, did really dumb stuff. Bad trade deals, bad social policy, bad corporate policy, laid the groundwork for all of the horrible. And again, this idea that we've got to compromise. We've got to work together. And moved us, you know, full tilt boogie down the neoliberal superhighway. You know, privatization, deregulation, profitization. And what we've done over these last decades, we've sold off our cities, we've sold off our infrastructure, we've sold off our souls, basically, because, well, you know, got to tighten the belt. And the thing that bothers me is, again, we keep falling into this. And, you know, you can go through each of the president's eras and you can go, you know, this was bad, this was good, this was, you know, I look at the Trump era and what's interesting to me is I'm now listening to people tell me how much they're concerned about debt and deficits when during those 4 years of the Trump era, we literally spent a quarter of our debt. Nobody seemed to care about it then, spending like drunken sailors. And in fact, everyone tells me how great the economy was under Trump. While doing massive, enormous amounts of deficit spending. Again, disconnect. But telling me how wonderful everything was, propped up on debt spending. But now we've got to cut all that out. It's crazy. And the weird thing is this is not new. What is new, and you know, I had someone ask me, what was the worst part of the Trump administration? And I said, you know, the worst part of the Trump era was finding out, you know, not about what Trump was or what Trump was going to do. We knew he was going to do all of the things he did. We knew he was going to be involved in scandal after scandal. We knew he was going to run the White House like a mafia don. We knew that. What we didn't know and what we learned during that era is, well, we learned an awful lot about our family, friends, and neighbors. You know, we're finding out more every day now. You know, these hearings are coming out, these depositions, all of this stuff in the courts. For instance, you know, one of the controllers at the Trump Organization is talking about the hush money payments that they use to keep people in line. Who didn't already know that? We're just now confirming it in the court, when someone putting their hand on the Bible. But the thing that gets me is, you know, the thing that bothers me is the idea that we were all somewhere, I don't know, somewhere in the same book. We all kind of had the same ideas somewhere in, maybe not on the same chapter or the same page, but at least in the same library at the minimum. And here we are in this weird moment of, alternative facts and alternative realities and all of this, this division and hatred and I've got to win. Look, I remember learning as a kid about, you know, book bans of the 50s. And you go, you know, it's ludicrous. Who would do such a thing? Why would you do such a thing? How could that happen? And yet here we are. They're banning books. I mean, they're not burning them yet. Keyword, yet. I mean, it's coming. This kind of wow. And the thing that gets me is we're not allowed to come to solutions. We're not. We're not allowed. We've got to have our hats. We've got our red hat, our blue hat. We've got our polar opposite camps. And we cannot. No, ever. And our politics used to be that place where we did come together, where we did, you know, compromise a little bit. And we were able to hold on to our values a little bit. But you got things done. The problem is the fight is more important than the solution. We've got lucrative industries out there that are making tons of money off of division. There are cottage industries on how we can stoke division. For instance, I got an email from Wayne LaPierre today. You go, who's Wayne LaPierre? He's the gun guy. He's the head of the National Rifle Association, the gun fetish guy, who sent me this email and said that the title line was, the NRA will always stand up for your rights. Okay. In the email, he says, and I go, look, I'm not against people and their rights. You know, we want to fight for, you know, rights. Wayne LaPierre says the NRA is the only organization standing in the way of widespread gun confiscation. What? Where's that? Where's that at? Did I miss something? Are they in the same van with the stove troopers? Do we have, you know, roving marauders going house to house stealing guns? No, the answer is no. Literally nobody is calling for that. Nobody. 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 But this is the kind of stuff that they stoke because they get the simple to go, they're going to come for my guns. Nobody's coming for your guns. Nobody. Nobody. But there's a lot of money by the NRA to be made by this. They want you to pay your dues. They want the gun manufacturers to keep ramping up production to get you to go, oh, they're gonna take this. I better go buy some more. Obama was the greatest salesman for guns because they were able to go, hey, he's coming for your gun. He never was, but they sold it as that. And people went out in droves and bought guns and guns, guns they probably never even opened because they were coming. And who made money? The NRA. Because for them, the solution, and understand, the majority of people agree on solutions on how we move forward on the gun issue. Universal background checks, universally accepted. High numbers of both Democrats and Republicans. Accountability, something we used to believe in. No, can't do that anymore, sorry. And it's not just that, it's not the gun issue, it's all of them. Immigration's another thing. We can't, we're never going to be allowed to come to an immigration issue because you've got the belief that one side wants to swing the doors wide open and let everybody in, let billions of people in, and the other side that wants to build a 4,000-foot wall, 16 feet deep, so that no one ever comes and we're isolated from the rest of the world and nothing. And sorry, that's not how the world works. But a solution is never coming. Because it's the outrage. We've got to keep us ticked off at each other. Got to keep us angry. And yet today I find a report from the Commonwealth Fund. And this is one of those moments where you go, and again, another problem. Not going to be solved because we're so divided and pitted against each other. Commonwealth Fund report finds that the United States is experiencing the worst health outcomes in the entire world. Higher than any other country equal to our income. We're more likely to die younger and from avoidable causes. According to the OECD, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the globe of countries, you know, like us, the OECD countries, they spend about 9.6% of their GDP on healthcare. You know how much we spend? Almost 18%. Nearly double. And yet we get worse outcomes in wide arrays of infant mortality, maternal death rates. You go highest in the world, actually. Highest suicide rates in the world. Highest maternal and infant mortality rates. The highest death rates of avoidable and treatable diseases. And why? Because we have the lowest rates of practicing physicians in hospitals, hospital beds per 1,000 people. We have the lowest rates of people going to see the doctor because we've got a privatized system that says everybody's got to have skin in the game, which means every time you go to the doctor, if you can get an appointment, you're digging into your pocket. We're the only country that doesn't have universal national health care, and yet we pay almost double what everybody else is. Now understand, we know that we've known this for a long time. Nothing new, nothing surprising, nothing shocking. It is what has been happening to us. But we don't get to talk about that because we're still talking about they're going to take my guns. And we need a wall. And we're fighting over masks. And we're fighting over stuff that's meant to divide and keep us pitted against each other. Because we can't talk about really solving problems. We've just got to be angry at each other. And our politics is where this is happening. And look, the plan going forward to privatize and profitize and destroy Medicare and Medicaid, that's their answer. Make it more expensive, make it more further out of reach. And again, harm working people. Again, every one of these crises that they create, who gets the short end of the stick? You do. I do. We do. So when do we put it down? When do we say enough already? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or give us a call, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Virginia's back in the news. Virginia Governor Glenn Youngkin asked the House and the Senate there to fix a screw-up. Because evidently, they've had a little accounting error, something very minor on the education front. Simple spreadsheet mistake. Oops. Could happen to anyone. You know, happens every day. You overcalculate about $203 billion in education funding. Could have happened to anyone. Could, you know, it was a post-it note got misplaced. You know, so K-12 funding, about $203 million short. Now he's asking to fix it because he got caught. They finally figured out, this is going to really screw over some school districts, especially our rural base. Because this is the dirty little secret. Rural schools are much more dependent on state funding across the country than our urban schools. Because urban schools are already taking it on the chin. It's those suburban, it's those rural schools who are used to having high school football games and used to having stuff because they've been getting money from the state. This was kind of their money. So seeing Republicans spring to action in Virginia, kind of impressive because they know who their constituents are. And they're going to fill this gap. Don't know how yet. I'm not sure. But they say that they're going to make those rural school districts whole. No real talk about the urban school districts. Now, this is one of those moments where you go, where are they coming up with 200? And I guess it's 201 million. The post-it note was a little off. $201 million over the next 2 years in that state for education. Where are they going to get it? I'm not sure yet. I'm sure they're gonna fudge the numbers, and you know where it's coming from, right? It's gonna come from the more vulnerable people. It's gonna come from the disabled. It's gonna come from low income. You know, you name it. It's gonna come from the people who don't have advocates who are gonna be able to stand up and fight for themselves. And this is sadly how this game plays out all the time, and this is where my frustration is. There are moments where we could rally together and say, no, maybe we should have the Glenn Youngkins of the world dig a little deeper into their pocket because they got deep pockets. They can afford to fund education instead of all of these schemes to defund our public education system. How about we have a plan to, fully fund them? But no. I'm waiting to see. Again, devil in the details. We'll find out where they... You know, where they're going to shake out $201 million. You know, maybe they've got big couch cushions. I don't know. Maybe there's some, you know, when they do the laundry, you know, a check will fall out. I don't know. But it's going to be a heavy lift, and there are going to be people who are going to suffer for this. And who do you think that's going to be? And this, for me, is the central question in every one of these political debates. Who are the winners? Who are the losers? Goes back to high school government. You know, my teacher back then said government decides who gets what. And for too long, the working class of this country has been getting the screws because we haven't organized our political power. We haven't organized our ability to stand up and say no more. So for me, over the next couple of days, we may see a trickle. We may see, you know, I almost guarantee it's going to come from disability funding. It's going to come from low-income housing and heating and those kind of things. Things to help the poor. Because, well, they're already down there. Might as well kick them. Because it's what they do well. Under the guise, and this is, again, I keep coming back to this, under the guise that we're this grand Christian nation. Under the guise that, you know, we're our... I'm not going to say brothers keepers because that's out the window. But in looking at this, again, Virginia's another state like Pennsylvania, like Iowa. All of these schemes with the goal of one thing, privatize public education. I'll have to tell you, I don't think this was an accident. I know, Rick, sounds conspiratorial. I don't know. Seems convenient. Seems like a large amount of money, kind of too big to be missed. It's not like a rounding error. It's not like, oh, we moved the decimal point one and, oops. It's not like that. And it's interesting how the oopses always are on the negative for working people. It's never, oops, we taxed the rich too much. Oops, we asked Glenn Youngkin to kick in too much. It's never that. It's always, oops, sorry, poor people. Tighten the belt. Oh, gee, we would have loved to have funded that education program. Oh, darn, next time. We'll get you on the rebound. It always seems, or am I the only one who sees this? And then here we go. School districts are going to have to make tough choices. And yet, the corporate side of education, they don't seem to run out of money. Especially if you turn on my local radio stations where they're advertising how wonderful Charter Week and Choice Week is and vouchers are And yet when the studies come out, they don't do any better. In a lot of cases, do worse. And a lot of them within 5 years fail. Like most businesses. And the question I come back to is, when do we say enough? When do we as working people finally come around to the idea that
the Shah 101. This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
ABC News, I'm Morgan Norwood. The FBI now searching another of President Biden's home in Delaware, this one in Rehoboth Beach, as part of the investigation into handling of classified material. The president's personal lawyer calls it a planned search. The Fed is set to raise interest rates again today. A quarter of a percent hike is expected. The funeral for Tyre Nichols in Memphis is today, pushed to this afternoon due to bad weather and travel delays. Still, the investigation into his police beating death is ongoing.
Many activists, including Reverend Al Sharpton, other activists as well, and Vice President Kamala Harris is planning to attend, as well as the families of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, who were killed by police. Their families are expected to attend the funeral, which has just been pushed back to 2 o'clock Eastern time, 1 o'clock local, because of the weather here in Memphis.
ABC's Stephanie Ramos. This is ABC News.
Never completely ready to adopt a teen.
For late nights writing English papers.
For your teen's music taste.
For dinners where they talk more on their phone than with you.
For the first time, they call you mom.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen, and you can't imagine the reward.
To learn more about adopting a teen, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Remember the last time your family visited the forest? It's a place of wonder and imagination for the whole family, where stories come to life, and it's closer than you think. Ready to plan your next visit? Make the forest part of your story today at a local park near you, or find one at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a Civic Media radio station. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Fighting PFAS pollution might be harder than first thought. Christy Remicall is an environmental engineer at the University of Wisconsin in Madison.
What we really need to do is to prevent them from getting into the environment in the first place, to decrease our use of these chemicals, because once they're out there, they're really hard to contain.
Remicall spoke to a state Senate committee Tuesday. Governor Evers says he wants a legislative solution to the PFAS problem. The idea appears to have bipartisan support. Two groups are suing to keep two statewide referendums off April ballots. They claim the legislature missed the spring ballot deadline. The Wisconsin Elections Commission says they made it on time. The questions would put bail reform and unemployment eligibility before Wisconsin voters. In sports, the Bucks beat Charlotte last night 124-115. Marquette hosts Villanova tonight. I'm Terry Bell. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Ty Christian from Lords of the Trident. Can you say Max Inc. Radio rocks, Jimmy K?
Their screwballism and intentionally bringing the evil of bigotry, intolerance, and even fascism in from the fringe of politics to sit in the seat of power. This is Jim Hightower saying, this is shameful and it's dangerous. Evil swarms when so-called leaders meekly give permission for crazies to use the government power to rule over us.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, she's announced that on February 15th, she's going to announce she's running for president. You can't make this up. So, the pie fight about to begin, as Trump has already begun attacking DeSantis, should be interesting on the Republican side to see the, again, the sideshow. Is this going to help us move the country forward in any way? I don't think so. And again, I come back to this idea. There are problems we can solve, but we're not allowed. Because again, it's the fight. The fight is more important than the solutions. It's more lucrative, certainly, than the solutions. And here to share some thoughts on, well, is there hope? Is there a way forward in the environment that we're in? Or, you know, do we need a catastrophe to bring us back together? I've asked my good friend, former Alabama Senator Doug Jones, to come share some thoughts. Doug, thanks for taking time for us.
As always, Rick, it's a pleasure to be with you tonight.
So, you know, let's start with Nikki Haley. Thoughts on, she said she was not going to run. If Trump was going to run, evidently she is. Any thoughts there?
Well, you know, look, clearly, I think a lot of Republican presidential wannabes see Donald Trump as a wounded animal right now. I think they underestimate him. I think there's still a hardcore base out there. But I think the term pie fight, Rick, is probably being a little bit too gracious with what we're going to see there. I mean, you've already seen Trump attacking DeSantis. He may not do that with Nikki Haley for a little bit because I don't think he'll see her as big a threat. But the fun's going to start, I think, pretty soon with that. And she's, you know, she's got an interesting record. I was reading some things early, and one comment that was made that I kind of think is going to resonate with voters a little bit is that she started out as a really principled politician doing the right thing for the state of South Carolina. And then all of a sudden she became just solely embedded with the Trump organization, so to speak. And here we are. And she's now going to try to outmaneuver DeSantis to be the next Donald Trump. She's not going to, I think, espouse the Republican line that I grew up with. They'll give lip service to the old Republican establishment, but this is going to be a culture war type Republican primary season. Trump's already set the stage. DeSantis has set the stage, and in order to compete, she's going to have to engage in those same kind of crazy culture wars that I think ultimately will defeat the Republican candidate, whoever it might be, in 2024.
Well, I mean, that's the hope. I mean, the hope is that, you know, we're not the country that we appear to be on the surface at this moment. But the fear is, you know, and again, I started off with this, the idea that, you know, during the Trump era, it's not what we learned about Trump. It's what we learned about ourselves that I think is most frightening, or at least our friends and neighbors.
Sure. I mean, this primary is going to be about division. This is going to be about whipping up a base. You're not going to hear except through lip service. I mean, look, Rick. Every candidate will talk about unity. Every candidate will talk about unifying the country, those kind of things. But when you strip away those sound bites and look at what they're really doing, you're going to see, again, culture wars that are nothing but division, coming out of every Republican presidential nominee, save potentially somebody like an Asa Hutchinson or a Larry Hogan. I think they move to the middle and they truly try to represent more than just a really radical right base.
No, but here's the problem that I have. There's so much special interest in division. There's so much money and an investment in the fight that the solution, if we did everything that the outrage machine wants, it would never be enough, and they would still create other divisions to keep us ripped apart. And this is where my fear is, because I look at guns. I talked about the gun issue today. I got an email from Wayne LaPierre, the head of the NRA, who said that, you know, they're coming to confiscate your guns. Nobody's coming to confiscate your guns.
No.
Nobody.
It's absurd. We've heard it for 40 years. Obama was going to do it. He didn't do it. Biden was going to do it. He's not doing it. Nobody's going to come confiscate guns. It's the most idiotic thing I've ever heard. I used to say an organization that had some, you know, at least some backbone to it. Apparently, they've had their own internal issues with how they've managed the NRA in the last few years and how they've managed all these people's money. But things like that, they will. You're right. There's big money in some of the special interest groups, and let's be honest. There's big money in media too. I mean, the media stokes these fears too, and it's all about clickbait and it's all about money. And we know that fear and division drives voters oftentimes, and so it's going to be difficult. You're going to have some folks just stand up and be damned, and maybe lose a couple of elections but really try to talk to people and get down and get through that. That's the only way you can get through, but it's going to be, you're absolutely right, that it's going to be really, really difficult with the money that folks like the NRA have, others have, and the media on both the right and the left who really play onto the fears.
Yeah, but my problem is there doesn't seem to be any left media. I mean, I keep hearing about this mythical left media, and I'm going, where is it? Did I miss this?
Well, you know, look, there are messengers still out there. There's still messengers that are still out there. But there's no question that the media from the right, the Fox News, the Tucker Carlson's, those folks, those are the ones that really stoke that. Those are the ones making a lot of money off of these divisions. And that filters down to candidates like Donald Trump and others. I think that DeSantis is stoking those fears. I think Youngkin was elected stoking those fears in Virginia. And, you know, we'll see if the Republican Party wants to move beyond that and actually try to do some things and work together and make some moves with these media folks and see what can happen. I want to try to, you know, have some hope and optimism here, because the alternative is really very difficult to do, but it's not easy. There's an interesting book that you, if you haven't seen it, by Chris Steirewalt called Broken News. I'll give Chris a plug. He's a great guy. He was the Fox News political analyst that called the race for Joe Biden in Arizona and got fired for doing it. And he's written this book called Broken News, and it talks about exactly what you're saying, how it's money driven by the media to kind of divide this country. He offers some pretty good insights, and part of it is insights for people that, you know, we've got to push back on that, and we've got to get into other silos.
Yeah, and look, and I think we've got to reclaim the word news. I mean, you know, I look at Fox. Fox is not news. You know, I've had people go, "Well, you're news." I'm not news. This is an opinion program. This is me having a conversation and wanting to find out what is news. But I'm not telling you what news is. And I think we've screwed that word up so badly that there's so many new quote unquote news sources that none of them are accurate. But they feed into our confirmation bias.
No, look, I think that's part of Chris's book. It is just simply that. We have moved from the days of Walter Cronkite and David Brinkley and Chet Huntley and those folks, where you had the news organizations were giving you the same set of facts that was news, and then people would make their opinions from those same set of facts. We don't have the same set of facts anymore coming from cable news and you know, all of these crazy streaming services and some radio shows, Rick, not yours, but others that just want to make stuff up. So you're right. It's not news anymore. It's entertainment. And yeah, it's entertainment for people, and it plays on the fears, and it makes them money.
Yeah, my North Star is always, how do you make working people's lives better? You know, I tell the story all the time. I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. I think about that kid growing up in that place where I grew up and what chance that kid's got to get out of those projects and lead a good life, and what policies we can use to move that forward. That's always been my North Star. It's getting stuff done. But sadly, there's too much that's put in our way to not get things done. For instance, you know, I look at this Commonwealth Fund report that just came out. I'm sure you probably saw this, that points out that, you know, we in this country spend almost twice as much as every other country in the OECD, in the OEDC world on healthcare, yet we get worse outcomes, have higher suicide rates, higher deaths from preventable diseases, higher infant mortality, higher maternal mortality, all of the negatives. Not even in no universal coverage, and yet we can't seem to solve very simple problems like this. We should have every child with health care. Every adult should be covered. No one should die of a preventable disease in the wealthiest country in the history of civilization. That should be the minimum.
No, I agree with you. You know, I agree with you. Getting there at this point given that, given what's gone on, not just for the last 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, but for decades now in our healthcare system, and the technology that's been advanced, and the number of things that we see coming up, the pharmaceutical industry, all of that, it's such a major problem that we've got right now. It is going to take an awful lot to try to fix that and get to it. You cannot wave a magic wand anymore and try to get that done. One would think that we can do it, but it goes back in a lot of ways to political power. Everybody, I guarantee you, Rick, everybody that you talk to on the Hill, if you just took your speech just then and asked them, are you in favor of this? I don't think anybody would say, no, I'm not in favor of improving that. I'm not in favor of improving health outcomes. I'm not in favor of improving, getting more cost-efficient health care. And even universal health care, if you define universal, meaning everyone has an opportunity for good quality health care. I think everybody would agree with it. Getting there is really difficult, though, because of the infrastructure that's already in place and breaking through with that. We couldn't even get in Alabama, and I think it's now down to about 13 or 14 other states, to expand Medicaid when they had 3 years of an opportunity where they wouldn't have to pay one damn dime back, not one dime back to the federal government. 3 years, just billions of dollars it was going to come in to my state over a 10-year or 12-year period. They wouldn't do it because the Affordable Care Act got nicknamed after a former president. And it was a purely political decision. They hid behind the money that ultimately they couldn't get the money. And it was just a fallacy. So it's, everything comes down to right now the political power. I think what we saw playing out in the House of Representatives vote for a speaker, the 15 votes for a speaker, is kind of a microcosm of what we see so much. And that is people will do or say just about anything in order to get their power, to keep their power, to get that gavel. And that is a problem that is going to take a lot of political courage for folks to stand up and break and get with folks on both sides of the aisle and do the things that you're talking about to, quote, get things done. Because you're right, that's what the American people want. Polling after poll after poll, focus group after focus group, that's what it's all about.
No, it's absolutely. But the sad reality is we can't fix simple things. I mean, look at this debt ceiling fight. And I'm sure you're probably as frustrated as I am with this. I view the people who are in charge of the House right now as people who literally want to shoot the hostage. I mean, we've created another hostage situation with this debt ceiling. And I believe there are people right now who would be okay with sending us into default if it meant that they didn't get their pound of flesh. And I fear what that means for working people, not just in this country, but across the globe, because we've got people who want the center stage.
No, there's no question. And the sad thing is, most of those people really don't know what the consequences would be.
Or care.
To the United States. Or they might care if they really knew. I don't think that they really bother to look and see. And they start confusing the debt limit and a default with a government shutdown because we can't get a budget. Two completely different things. They don't consider the fact that the debt limit issue and raising the debt limit is for all of those bills that have been stacking up over time, including all of the bills that stacked up during the Trump administration, which these same people generally voted to raise the debt limit every time it was asked because we had to. And the consequences are dire. Look, I was a little bit encouraged today when I heard both coming out of the White House and Speaker McCarthy say that they had a frank discussion and they want to have more. At least it wasn't I was expecting the worst from that meeting today. And we didn't see that. We've got until June. So hopefully something will be worked out and cooler heads can prevail. And we can, because at the end of the day, the debt ceiling has got to be raised one way or another. We've got to get it done. Everyone knows that. And I think it'll happen. I'm just going to be, there will be people voting against it, though.
Sure, there will be. Absolutely.
There are always the people that will vote on it as a matter of principle. Their vote will not count, and they know it. It's a safe vote for them, and they can demagogue it. And I think our job, part of the job is going forward, is to remind people that they did not vote to do that and what the consequences would be. We've got to turn those tables on them somehow and not let them get away with making a political statement on something as important as that. Because you hit something that I also don't think people fully appreciate. And it's not just our 401ks. It's not just your defined benefit plans in retirement. This would be a worldwide problem if the United States of America defaulted on its debt obligations. A worldwide problem at a time when the economies of this world and the economy of this country is slowly getting back. Inflation is slowly getting under control. People are working. Things are going on. But we still have a war in Ukraine. We still have the possibility of an economic collapse if we don't stay this kind of course. It would be a serious matter that I just don't think folks fully appreciate it, and they want to play politics with it, and I'm as frustrated with that as you are.
And it's not just playing politics, Doug. It's the fact that they seem to want to use it as an opportunity to tick some things off of their wet dream list. Going after Social Security and Medicare. Why in the name of why would you choose that the first club out of the bag? And for me, it's really telling that the first club out of the bag is we've got to go after these quote-unquote entitlement programs. No, Social Security and Medicare are not entitlement programs. We paid for those. We earned those. It's not a deserved thing. We earned those. We paid for them. They're ours. Stop trying to destroy them. And this is my problem with this whole setup. Working people constantly are taking it on the chin at every frame, whether it's the Fed raising interest rates, seeming to want to move us towards a recession, or Republicans trying to take away what little safety net we've got left.
Well, I agree with you, except I'll defend the Fed a little bit. I think that the Fed had to take some aggressive action because those interest rates are the one thing that they could do to cool the economy a little bit. It was pumping out a fast and furious, and with interest rates rising, the inflation rate has started to subside. It's why you saw the Fed today just raise by a quarter of a point rather than a half or three quarters of a point. That is a good sign. That is a really good sign. However, on the other hand, it's all the other factors that we've still got to deal with. And you're absolutely right. Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, all of that is being paid for every paycheck. We pay for it. And I think that got such blowback throughout it was an issue in the 2022 midterms where Rick Scott and others were talking about people having skin in the game, talking about privatizing, talking about reauthorizing it, every year. Hell, if you can't raise the debt limit, how are you going to reauthorize Social Security, Medicare, which is so contentious among some people? So it was raised then. I think people soundly rejected that. Donald Trump even has said, leave it alone with regard to the debt ceiling. That doesn't mean he's saying leave it off, take it off the table. He's just saying don't make it a part of the debt ceiling. I think McCarthy has said that too, but there are still people out there. And that's driven by, the folks, I think, on Wall Street and other places that would make money on privatizing Social Security and other programs like that. So,
I mean, for all of the horrible that people are saddled with in this moment, I think we're moving in a direction that is positive. I think we're investing in infrastructure, reshoring some manufacturing. I saw the president this week was in New York and saying, look, we're going to build the tunnel that the New York, New Jersey area has desperately needed for many years. There's massive investments going. This is a step in the right direction. And again, I come back to, I had someone remind me that after World War II, we had a big bit of inflation as well, because of demand and people getting back into the economy, except we handled it differently. We handled it by massive investments. We handled it with stronger unions fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, instead of what we seem to be going through right now.
Yeah, look, one thing you mentioned, the unions, and one fact I heard last week when I was in D.C. and then again this week, and I did not know it, but, we're seeing an uptick in union membership. And Alabama okay, Rick? Alabama led the country in an increase in union membership last year. And I just, you know, we were a strong union state, and it really helped the state a lot. And I think, you know, hopefully things are turning around on that a little bit. I do think that when people are concerned about the debt, they hear about the debt. And that's one of those issues, Rick, that I think Republicans especially can demagogue to death about the debt and how we're leveraging and mortgaging our grandchildren. And there's some validity to some of the things they're saying, but it overlooks a couple of things. It overlooks, number one, Donald Trump and his tax cuts for the richest corporations and the richest people in the country contributed to that debt significantly. I mean, in a big, big way. The second thing that contributed to it was COVID. I was in the Senate when we had to pass a $2 trillion emergency relief plan, the largest in the history of this country. And it passed almost unanimously in the Senate and in the House because we were trying our best to save lives and save businesses and save jobs. And we did the best we could. It was not a perfect bill by any stretch. And the third thing that I think people forget and maybe don't even know is that the last budget in this last year, this administration, the Biden administration, lowered that debt by over $1 trillion. You know, I mean, the work that this administration has done has been to try to start whittling away at our national debt. And it will continue to do that, but you've got to do it in a responsible way. You can't do anything if you're not going to pay your bills.
No, and look, I say this all the time. The time to fight overspending is before you spend the money. It's not like I get to go to the restaurant, I get to eat, and I get to go, you know what, I decided, no, not going to pay for it. Dining and dashing is not something we should be doing yet. We've got some in the Senate who, like I've said, they want to shoot the host or they want to shoot the chef. Dine and dash.
Yeah, it's. I think it's primarily over in the House. There are going to be those in the Senate for sure, but I think that the House is going to be the real key there. You know, we've got a number of factors in the Senate that I think are working in our favor. But, you know, look, let's see how this plays out a little bit. Everybody wants to, it's really easy to play chicken right now when you're still 5 months away from this issue. What I hope people will understand, though, is if they want to play chicken for a little bit, do it for just a little bit. Because as we get closer to the debt ceiling deadline and we get closer to Armageddon on that issue, then the markets and the economy is going to start, we're going to feel it. They're going to, in anticipation of that, markets don't just react overnight sometimes. They start getting jittery and things start happening. People are going to be moving their stocks into cash. There's going to be a lot of things going on. So they need to come up with something to where they can go ahead and do this now, get this over with, get it down the road so we can move on. And then if you want to talk about spending, it's a legitimate issue in the United States Congress to talk about spending taxpayer dollars. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I'm with you. Last line of questioning I wanted to get into, classified documents. You've talked about this extensively. You know, they searched President Biden's, I guess, his beach house now. They didn't find anything. They searched his house. They didn't find anything. It seems like classified documents are turning up all over the place. Is there a way forward on this? I mean, and does this exonerate Trump from any of his problems with the pretty folders that he collected because they had nice words on them?
I think all of these are going to stand on their own. And, you know, Rick, if people that have followed me when all of the stuff with Mar-a-Lago hit, I have always been consistent about this, that this is all of this is about the documents. It's not about prosecuting. It's not about investigations. It is really about getting the documents back. That's why the DOJ and the archives spent a lot of effort giving Donald Trump every benefit of the doubt to return everything. But there was someone in that Trump world that kept telling them, you need to come back because you ain't got them all. There's still stuff there. And lo and behold, there was stuff there. I know there's a lot of people that have been talking about how you distinguish that with what happened with President Biden and now Vice President Pence. Documents got in their possession. They ended up in places that they shouldn't have been. But the president's lawyers, when they find out, they make a decision. They're going to completely cooperate. They're going to work with them. They're going to go through. They're going to allow.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.